Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to design an org chart.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Right? We want you to do your best.
Or how to organize your startup once it grows beyond the level where everybody's just one team, if you break things down. Yeah, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you've seen this now multiple times where you've started companies that were really small, but you've also started companies that grew. And it's funny, a lot of times I think people are not as mindful about designing an org chart. So it kind of just grows on its own. And there may be many different ways to do it. There may be really bad ways to do it. I'd love to talk about this and see kind of what your experience and what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a startup, you're growing. And growing doesn't just mean you're getting more customers. It also means for many folks, you're adding people. And in the beginning, you might not be that thoughtful about it and just add a few people, like a few engineers or a designer or whatever, as a need basis. And I've seen companies get to sizes that are ridiculous, like 15, 20 with that approach. Oftentimes, if you can catch a company at like 3, 5, 7, 10, before they sort of really have a org chart that they don't see, it's kind of the way to think about it. I like to catch them and say, hey, what does the org chart look like? They're like, what's the org chart? Or, oh, org charts are corporate, or we don't have a hierarchy. I'm like, well, like, you need some form of structure. So if you don't want to call it an org chart, you can call it a structure. What's your structure of your business, right? How does it get done? So I like to start there, but I think what we should identify is like, when do you know you have a problem? Because this problem happens at the beginning. And then my take on it, in my experience, is it's constantly happening after that. Meaning every person you add is kind of like another layer you're adding to it, where that person could potentially manage somebody or lead a team or you know, be a force of change. If it's like a flat organization or whatever, Everyone's got that character, you know, that moves things around, you know, or manages, so to speak, regardless of their structure. But either way, let's just take a traditional org chart. You know, it does fall in line where it's like, well, you know, you want to think about your company and think about maybe sometimes like you'll get that first time I call it, where someone comes to you and they're like, I want a raise. You're like, what? I'm like, yeah, they asked you that? How dare they ask you that? Dude, so do you have any other signs that like it's time to like rethink how you structure your team? Because yeah. I think there's a bunch of these.
Yeah, all right, so let's go through them. So I think when there's a fuck up and nobody knows who's responsible for it. That's a great one. Like that. Something obviously broke or was fucked up and everybody in the room looks around and nobody knows who should be responsible for this. There's nobody clearly owning this.
Or when someone walks in the office and nobody's there to greet them, or they're just walking around, and that happens like 10 times.
Yeah, or when almost about any topic, when there is a need to have a meeting, everybody's invited. It's another bad sign. Ooh. I would assume. Just
all company meetings that are like seven people in one room.
Yeah, about everything. Marketing, yeah. PR, engineering, you know, the server infrastructure. Just everybody's in every meeting. It's like, what? What's going on here?
That's awesome. Maybe the fact that you start having a lot of meetings.
Yeah, shit. Yeah.
Right? If you have a lot of meetings, usually so you're just a culture of meetings or something's wrong in your org chart.
And with that, the increase, I think not just in meetings, the general increase of communication demand, like all of a sudden amount of emails goes up a lot, or amount of chats go up a lot, or amount of, you know, phone calls, just the amount of communication is spiking in the company all of a sudden. I think that could be a really good, like, red flag on this.
Yeah, there's just a lot going on and everyone emails everybody. That's the same as everyone in every meeting, right?
Yeah.
CCs, all that. Or a lot of Slack all over the place. That's another one I've seen. A lot of Slack in the general.
Yeah.
Like just tons of it. And you can see some people are trying to get work done. That's when you can, one trick, just a riff on this, because I just thought of it, is like you just break out things into channels in Slack. And then all of a sudden everyone has to organize around them.
Yeah.
That's a good trick.
This is really a good trick. And we had this actually in our team where there were, we had a few rooms kind of organized around teams like the marketing room, the product room, or whatever. And then we realized more rooms is actually a good thing. Like, because there's just a lot, way too much noise in every room about things that don't really concern that thing or just that team. So, you know, there's now rooms popping up about something that's just going to be relevant for a week and for a few people, and then the room is dead again, right? Or rooms that are just for fucking around or making stupid jokes because there was too much of that in the general room.
I like that.
Right? So there's shenanigans as a room now. So there's having generic channels that are very noisy versus like breaking things into very specific groupings that are now, you know, now you're forced to be more mindful and more organized, as you said.
Yeah, that's a good remote team hack, especially.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it would be, it gets interesting when you do that and it's like a non-remote company, because then you have like certain ways of companies to organize. And then, you know, it's interesting where you, even how you name Slack and what you call these things, not the shenanigans one, although that's awesome, but like how you name some of these things and how the team even is structured. Is it by department or is it by project? What do you do?
Yeah.
Or do you have rooms for both?
Yeah.
Right? So what's interesting is you could just look at someone's Slack and just look at all that left side and probably know exactly how shit goes down over there.
Yeah,
it's because of just how much of that is going on. All right. So the org chart, I think we've identified a bunch of reasons when you know you got to change it. My process is always, let's look at it. Let's draw it. Someone's whiteboarding. And then we're just putting names and responsibilities, because oftentimes companies don't have titles. So it's responsibility. Sometimes they're like, oh, nobody's got a title. Okay. What are they responsible for? Okay. You know, like what part of the product, if it's all product or something like that. And then you just start really assembling kind of, you look at your team in a different way. I think that's really the key to it. You look at your team in a different way instead of just like, oh, we're not doing enough marketing, or the marketing person is, you know, overwhelmed. You know, we should hire another marketing person. It's like, wait, hold on. You know, there's a bunch of layers to it. One layer is like, who's in the company right now? Can anyone else help? You know, if that truly is a problem. The second layer would be like, is this truly a problem? What is that person doing all the time? And is there other options besides hiring? Like, you know, outsourcing or, you know, removing some of those things like that. So I think to me, there's a bunch of these tactics before you decide to hire somebody. And if you haven't looked at the org chart and you're starting to hire people and you're at like 7, 8, 9 people, then look, get an org chart or draw it out, or I don't know, make some pods or make it up, you know, but like do something.
Yeah, I think that one of the funny things about this is that the word org chart, I think, is what turns a lot of people off. Right? It's like, yeah. Oh my God, this sounds hard. This sounds so corporate, right? So people want to rebel against that and like, no org charts here. We're a flat organization. I mean, it's funny. I should try to collect this. I feel like I've seen at least like 20 blog posts of the last year of people going, we tried this totally flat thing and surprise, it doesn't work. This is not how people like
Medium and Holacracy and all that stuff. At least they're trying, is all I'll say.
Yeah. And there was like Balsamic had this, and like so many really cool companies that were like, fuck this org chart thing. There's no bosses. Everybody's their own thing.
Yeah, everyone's an individual contributor to some extent.
And we're going to figure it out. And then it seems like, you know, a year later they go, all right, we tried this and it sucks because people need a little bit of structure, right? Just a little bit. We don't have to be like corporate assholes, but having like a team of 5 people, nobody's responsible for like leading that effort or organizing that group. It's just something that makes people miserable, not as happy.
It's kind of absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is kind of an interesting thing. But one thing that I love about the idea, when you like actually use a whiteboard and you write down names and you go, what is the relationship of the people to each other and of the groups to each other and all that? If you really draw it out and you actually like have the little lines and the little this and that, is that sometimes if you step back, if you do that exercise and you step back and you look at it, because it's so visual, it might really hit you in the head where the problem is, right? Or where there is
every time.
Right?
If there's a problem, every time you'll see it. There's like a gap or something.
Yeah, or you see, oh shit, there's like 25 people and there's a direct line to one human, right? This person has like 25 direct reports. This doesn't seem to make sense. Like, this is really horrible. Oh, you know what? Yeah. That kind of explains why this person is always stressed out and always like all over the place. It doesn't get like their shit done, because nobody can have like 25 people that are directly reporting to them every day. Why don't we break these teams out? Why are there some other people not carrying more weight on the leadership side of things, although they've been there for years? Like, it's just, it makes things very obvious where they're kind of invisible if you just think about it as like, oh, we're one team, and I know Bob, and I know John, and I know Mary, but how do they all relate to each other? Who works with whom? And is there a team that's like, you have like this massive group in one area, and then there's this other area that's equally as important, you just don't have enough resources there, enough people helping there. So I really like that exercise. I don't like to do it. This is one of those things where it's like, I think broccoli is really helpful and useful and healthy, but I'm not really eating it as much as I should. So I don't do this regularly, but when I've done it, it's always been super useful. So I know that people don't like the word, but like drawing out your team and how people relate to each other is just a super powerful tool.
Yeah, I mean, they should get over it. It's just a couple of words, and there's a lot of these corporate words around. The problem is, like, if you're trying to organize people and get shit done as a team, and you don't know how this all works and who reports to who or who's responsible for whom or, you know, all that, then you end up, the more projects and stuff you pile on, the more chaos there is. The more chaos there is, the less likely you're getting where you need to go, and you're not going to be resilient to any issues. And usually it just goes all the way back to the team and how something was organized, or what, you know, how someone said something or structured something. Also, like the fact that not any single person can't have everything about the company in their head at any given time.
Yeah,
makes it really important to choke, right? Choke meaning like you can't have 25 people reporting to one person. There's no choking there, right? There's no like constraining and saying, okay, this one human only has to talk to five to get anything done. And just so everyone knows, like, if they don't know now, like, there's people that have in the teens of reports, right? Like folks that run really large public companies, some of the largest companies on the planet, teens. If they don't get past about 18, 17, 13, you know, that kind of range. But the folks that are really, really well oiled, their machines are in the like 5, 7, less, you know?
Yep.
So why would you as a startup try anymore? Is, I guess, what I'm saying. Because even these large companies that could, you know, someone could have a lot of reports, which sounds ridiculous, I know, but like they don't, because it just doesn't work. It's not effective. It doesn't enable people and humans to do their jobs either. So you end up constraining people actually when you try to take over that many reports. You don't even give them any, you don't give any empowerment. And then everything falls on one or a few people.
Yeah. So let me ask you, what are, you know, let's talk about kind of the best org charts that you've seen, or the best ways to organize teams that you've seen as startups kind of go beyond the first, like whatever the size is of team that does that, is kind of like we're all in one room and work together. Maybe it's 5, 6, maybe it's less than 10. I don't know what the ideal number is. But once you're past 10, it's not anymore we all just do one thing and we're all kind of working on just one type of project equally together usually. Is there any like really horrible ways to organize teams that you've seen always fail or fail mostly, and any real particularly good or simple ones that you help, that you kind of seen again and again succeed? Any kind of patterns that you've recognized over the years?
Yeah. Number one key thing is that, and this is difficult, it doesn't happen necessarily early, but it's not actually that difficult. It just requires a lot of discipline, is make it about metrics. Make it about numbers. Like if you're a small team and you're a SaaS product and you got software to sell, just sell. Like all you have to do is have that metric of like sales, and everyone just collides around that metric and you're all one, for lack of a better word, growth team. And everyone's responsible for selling, making selling easier, making it faster, making more sales happen. There's a number. You know, it's on a screen and it's just the number of sales, and that's all everyone is like focused on. And then you could have some chaos because at least everyone has the common goal, and the common goal is very straightforward, you know, and you can even, you don't just have one number. You have one number and you have the target. The target number you want and what you're currently at for that day. And you just go day by day. You can even do week, target number for the week and you know, where you're at. I like day. I like both, but. You know, just, and then you just get disciplined about that's what we're going to do. And that works for a while. And then eventually it starts breaking because there's just so much more to do and there's so many more customers. And then you can organically basically take that one number and break it out into other numbers. Like, you know, maybe at one point it might be number of customers, but then you might realize that, you know, the team's bigger, you have more to do, you make it revenue. And then when it's revenue, there's components of revenue, right? There's new business, which involves marketing and other things. And then there's keeping current business. That's like customer support, stuff like that. So you just start naturally seeing this breakout, but keep it metrics driven. Hold the teams accountable, hold the people accountable, organically grow the teams. You know, like for example, if you have one person working on customer support, how do you get the second one? How do you even know when to get the second one? That's a really, you know, interesting question to answer if you think about it. So what you have to start implementing is metrics. How many are they dealing with? How many tickets, right? And how long do these tickets take? Are there things we can do to first make it more efficient by optimizing? So tagging a lot of the support tickets, figuring out what's taking up a lot of time, things like that, right? And then once you feel really good about that and you know the productivity of that one person and you know it's like in a good place, then maybe you consider another one, but then you can even predict, you know, these are the number of customers we're adding. This is how many support tickets that are probably going to be produced. What do we do? And again, it goes back to those numbers, because if you can quantify human beings and their work, specifically their work, I'm not talking about the emotional part and the personalities, just the work, then everything else sort of sorts itself out because accountability exists. And you can have those conversations of like, oh, did you do it? Did you not do it? Did we make it? Did we not make it? Did that team do it? You know, do we need to make a change with the person, right? Go on a different team or whatever, right? Those are all the kind of things you want to think through, but this is the key. And it's how I plan on scaling my companies, but it's very difficult to do just because we don't naturally think like that. The companies that are scaling the fastest, doing the best, have some form of this kind of accountability.
I love that because, yeah, I mean, it's very easy to break down teams, especially once you grow, you have a kind of a larger organization in terms of the people. It's easy to just give people to assign a certain type of work to a team versus a certain type of result. Right? Giving people ownership over a very clear, non-ambiguous KPI. Like, what is the number this team owns versus what is the type of work that this team is involved in? That's a very big difference. And so I love that. I think it simplifies and clarifies things. I also love that because we just did a team retreat in Berlin with the entire company, and that's pretty much how we organized the team. So this falls very nicely into kind of a thesis on how we like to do things. You said that this is really hard and that's because that's not naturally how people think. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that teams have a tough time doing this, or companies or startups have?
Because in the beginning, you don't see it like that. In the beginning, you're trying to build stuff. There aren't very many metrics. I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
Just aren't. I wish there were. I wish it was a little more straightforward. But for the beginning, you're just trying to build something and get some customers. And that momentum, if you stick to that momentum too long, then you don't get practical about your business, right? Everyone eventually does if they're going to survive, right? They get metrics driven. And I said it specifically like that. I don't mean data driven. I don't mean data informed. Literally, they drive the business on the metrics because it's business metrics you're looking at, right? So, but in the beginning, you don't. And I know I might have said this before in a podcast, but I've definitely said it to a lot of people recently. Like in a startup, you're just racing to the spreadsheet, because once you get to the spreadsheet, it's on. Because that's a scale problem. That's like not even scale. That's like numbers, right? It's math. You can go look at that and make some rational decisions, or hire people who know how to look at that and make rational decisions. Either way, before I knew how to do it, I'd hire people to do it, or I'd, you know, ask my friends. Now I know how to do it, so it's cool, but whatever, you know, and you're just racing to the spreadsheet. And I think the companies don't start like that. A lot of companies start with hypotheses and experimentation now, which I'm really happy about. And I think that wasn't the case even just 3, 4, 5 years ago. Thank you, Eric Ries, and the many others that spread that out. But like,
and the heat and shots.
Yeah, sure. I'll take credit. You, I'm sure, can take credit. There's many of us that really latched on to experimentation as the way to do startups, but we're not so deliberate about it. And kicking out of experimentation into actual like business goals, you know, business metrics. I don't even mean OKRs and all that. We could rant on OKRs, or I could at least. And I'm sure, Steli, you've got an opinion. But anyways, like, yeah, we're just trying to get to some basics like that. And then all your creativity, all the innovation you want to do, all the fun you want to have, that comes on top of that, because the basis and the foundation of this is still your business.
So let me ask, so maybe to wrap up this episode, one last piece of this that I'm curious about is, you know, at the beginning, we're just all one team. And then we're splitting usually in a few teams. And on the one hand, that's great because now, you know, people can hopefully, a number that they own, they have maybe the ability to get a lot more done because they're not pulled into everything that happens with everyone, but they kind of can focus on a team and a group of people that own a certain area in the business and all that good stuff. But what that also can do is it can, obviously, because you're grouping people now, they can create cliques and groups that identify, where people identify heavier with the team they're in than with the overall company and what the overall what is in the best interest of the business versus what's in the best interest of their team or their teammates. And so if these teams, you know, if people buy into the team structure a bit too much, it can then start creating these toxic cultures that we all know in large corporations where there's just war between departments, right? There's just certain departments are always power struggling and fighting each other and all that bullshit.
You know why? Over resources. You know where those resources are? A P&L. You know who controls them? A finance person. You know why these things get created? A lot of the things I said. That's what you're fighting though, right?
Yeah.
You're fighting that complacency of like having to have, you know, fights over budgets. But, you know, like even at the best companies, that is how it boils down to at some scale, right?
So what do you do? Do you ever encounter this in smaller startups once you start having, you know, you have the marketing team, the sales team, the product team, and the support team. And then the sales team is blaming the marketing team that they're not generating enough leads. And the product team or the support team blames sales that they're overpromising things and that's why they're struggling with it. And all that, like, how do you make sure that these teams work really well together and all kind of aligned?
Forced empathy creation opportunities. Just create empathy. Like, fuck this. Literally, fuck this. I've said this so many times about this in companies, my own and others. It's like, we're all one team or it ain't going to work.
Yep.
So like, we all get in the room and hash it out. Oh, you got a problem? It's just like, I'm the hunter. All right, who's got a problem with who else? You know, who's got the problems, right? And who you going to hate on? You going to hate on somebody? Great. If you don't want to tell me, you better go tell them. There's only two options. And if you tell me, I'm just going to go rope them in. Right? So like, sometimes this shit gets out of hand, man. Like, especially when things aren't good. Like, everyone's got, like, when things aren't good, everyone thinks, you know, the other party's responsible. When things are great, everyone's like, yeah, that was us. That was us doing marketing, you know, we did all those leads. What us? They were all qualified. Yeah. And then sales at the same time is like, yep, uh-huh. Had the best quarter ever. Like, it's like, but like the worst of it, oh, we didn't get enough leads for marketing. All the leads you sent were not qualified. Okay. All right. And then marketing's like, well, you didn't sell them for enough money. We can look at your data too. Because marketing looks at a lot of data, right? Sales talks a lot.
Yeah.
So that's the typical stuff, man. It's terrible. But it's like, it's one team. It's one company. Somebody, usually a founder or a manager, needs to come in and be like, just start bumping heads. And, you know, it's for me, it's, you know, in those situations, I'm like, I'm not worried about, truthfully, if everyone's not acting right, I'm not worried about letting people go fast if they can't fix themselves. Because usually it's just a whole bunch of people that turned personal issues into business issues. You know, and then brought it to the workplace. Like, just somehow, you know, they looked at me weird and it's all this like unsaid stuff. Usually that's what it boils down to, right? We're humans. We're terrible with each other. Terrible when it comes to like feelings and emotions. Terrible with ourselves.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my rant. Sorry, dude. Been ranting.
No, I love it. I love the quote of the podcast is like, we're humans. We're just terrible.
Yeah.
See? I love that. All right, so just adding to this, and this is going to be kind of the our tips for wrapping up this episode. I do think that kind of forced opportunities where empathy is a great one, you know. And we talked about this in prior episodes on like having salespeople teach engineers how sales work, or have them observe how salespeople are selling, kind of understanding them better. But also having salespeople maybe work on a little like product mock-up session and understand the complexity of really thinking things through and all the questions you have to ask if you're building something and all the kind of edge cases you have to consider. And just like having each the teams understand the pressures and the circumstances and the type of work that everybody has to do, the better they're understanding, the better they can empathize, the better they can communicate with each other. And then ultimately, that can kind of take care of a lot of the friction that happens between humans. Other thing on top of that is, just as you said, I think that you need to have a no tolerance policy when it comes to the blame game. And funny enough, one of the things that we discussed in our team retreat just recently was, you know, we now grown the team to a size where in prior companies, you know, I've seen kind of once you get close to 20 people, sometimes that's when on a very tiny level politics start, or group building, or cliques. Just some people like each other a lot better than other people, and then they start like maybe talking behind their back a little bit. And this is even in great teams where most people I say are really awesome people. It's just a big enough group for people to maybe not like some other people in the company, or not as much. And I think that you just need to have, like, to be very radical in the early days of not accepting any of it. No talking behind the back of somebody, no click building, and tell people, hey, this has been an amazing company so far. This has been an amazing place to come and work at. Don't be the asshole that ruins this for everybody forever, right? Don't be the first one that starts the click building. Don't be the first one that starts the rumors or that starts the, you know, fighting behind the back of somebody. Don't be the person that starts to make this a horrible place, because if you are, you're going to leave. You know, we're not going to talk about it long. We're going to, you know, put an end to it immediately. If you have a problem, come talk to me. We'll bring in the person. We'll meditate. We will have problems with each other. But we need to create a culture where we talk to each other about these problems instead of behind our backs about them. So you need to be really, really, I think, forceful and to making sure that you set really high standards there, because otherwise teams will start building resistance against each other and start fighting and blaming each other, and then you have a shitty culture. And with that, a bad place to work at. Alrighty, I think that's it from us on this episode, and we will hear you very, very soon.
Bye.
Bye.